Hello, and you're all very welcome to the Cannes Projects podcast, where we love to talk about culture, arts, nature, and wellness. And I'm Shane McKay, here with co-host Chris Sneed. Hey, Chris.
How's it going, everyone?
And very wonderful returning guest, George Higgs. How are you doing, George?
Hi, guys. I'm very well, thanks.
Good. It's great to have you back. And also great to have you back to celebrate your new album.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
No, you're more than welcome. I had to listen to it last night when it was fresh off the presses, and I'm highly impressed. It's another adventure into textural harmony, and it's fascinating. Listen, and just the whole concept behind Sense Ensemble, we spoke a lot about on the previous show with George, and I highly recommend anybody who hasn't heard that to go back and check it out. It was very well received from our audience. So you'll find that either on the Cannes Projects podcast, on Spotify, Spreaker, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc. So we're going to get into a lot more today. So George, any news anyway, aside from...
No, just at home with the storm happening outside, so...
Yeah. It seems to be
storm apocalypse.
Yeah. Exactly.
And the album is literally fresh off the presses. You were mastering yesterday.
Yeah, I mastered it yesterday. It took longer than I expected. When I master, I often go back into mixes, which probably is a no-no, but I just do it anyway.
I do that too, and I find it works really well, actually.
Yeah, it's like, why not? It's all the niggling things that you kind of knew were wrong to begin with. You're like, okay.
It kind of becomes a bit of a jigsaw, like, as well, when you're doing it like that, because...
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like when you bounce projects out of these programs, you have different settings for mastering and different settings for, you know, whatever, the final mix, and I kept mixing those up late at night. I'd be like, oh! I bounced it out at 16-bit, which would have been, you know, it's like, I had to go back.
Anyway. Oh, God. Well, back in the days when we were still using CDs a lot, you know, and it'd be like... doing it off, and it'd be like, why does it sound different? And then you try it in a car, and it's like, why is there way too much bass? But it's gotten a lot more straightforward, but there's quite a lot of pitfalls, all right, like that can just be, you know, the smallest thing, and it'll kind of...
Well, the biggest thing to me is, like, yeah, I agree, it's got so much, like, sitting there mastering the thing, I can play it out of different things right here, which is brilliant to be able to do that. But the thing that I think's become really different is the output, the nature of the output. If it's online, people normalizing it. So you spend all this time mastering, figuring out levels, then somebody just pumps it into normalization and all the levels at once.
Yeah. Or now, isn't it on SoundCloud now as well? They have they'll master your track for you as well, which
you have to pay them.
Yeah. I don't go near that myself personally now. Because I find it fun, you know. I enjoy that process myself anyway. So,
well, I mean, somebody who knows how to bake doesn't buy cake mix.
Yeah. I can understand somebody doing it because, you know, it's daunting in the beginning, and it's so, in a way, I don't know how you guys find it, but it's so simple, but it's not easy simple. You can get it very wrong, you know, and you're never quite sure. I think even the masters of mastering, you're never quite sure how far to push it, and
it can get overbaked
quite
easily, and like compression is something they say, like, you from the very beginning all the way to the final chain, you have to be quite careful with, because it kind of stacks and stacks and stacks, and then it's going to be broadcast as well or streamed, then that technically that's more compression then as well. And
exactly, I use only one thing in the mastering. I didn't use any compression, just the gain. That's all. I just pushed the gain up. And that's why I kept going back to the mixes. I didn't go back that many times because I don't use any compression. And the only reason is I worry that I get it wrong because I'm not experienced, because I've used plenty of compressors, but not at that stage where you're affecting everything. You know, I know you can go in and multi-pressors and stuff, but it's tricky business, you know? It's very tricky.
Yeah, it's delicate. Like, it's good to keep it simple, though. Generally, I think that's a good rule of thumb. Like, And I mean, we spoke about our mentor, Mr. O'Toole, and he always said, you know, less is more. Always is less is more. So it's like it's a good rule of thumb. It's like you kind of, you know, say reverb's a good example, and your ears kind of go, "Oh, that sounds really nice," and you're like, "Well, I better just actually maybe wind that back just a little bit more than I think it should be," and that's usually a safe kind of.
It's funny, yeah, isn't it? Like, it is, yeah. But it's funny then, I listen sometimes music and I'm like, oh, they don't use much reverb at all. Then I listen more closely. I'm like, Jesus, there's a hell of a lot of reverb on that voice. You just, it gets swallowed into the mix. I know. So when you hear people like Phil Spector, which I think he overused reverb, that's just my take. I'm just not into that sound. Mm. But a lot of people are. But he must have used a colossal. I don't know what instruments, like, it's all bathed in this.
Yeah, it was the wall of sound. Exactly. That was his thing. So, George, I've just got up on the screen here. I've got your SoundCloud and your new album, The Sense Ensemble. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and just the process and how it came about?
Sure. Well, I guess the cover says a lot because that was from a poster for performance of Sense Ensemble Study 1, which is the first track on the album. That was a study done in Trinity College when I was doing my PhD on music for deaf and hearing audiences. I was working with Irish sign language users, and they would come up with a dancer as well, Jessica Kennedy, who's a member of the Junk Ensemble, friend of mine and somebody I've worked with. She and a signer worked together to come up with a sequence of signs. And the idea was that they'd be a gestural motif, a kind of physical gestural rhythm. My research was all around how music's this whole body, multi-sensory expression, even if we're not sometimes conscious of it. And our language doesn't always help alert us to this, what I feel is always, you know, present reality of music, this multi-sensory quality. But so the performance of the Sense Ensemble Study 1, there's a poster I think Shane's going to bring up. Basically, it was the idea was that the audience would come in and there was no speech. They just come in and right away they'd be handed a P. We'll look at another P. I decided not to call it a P because we had lots of jokes during the first period, as you can imagine. I got to go take a pee and this and so on and so forth. And they'd be given a different colored pee anyway.
Is this it, George? Is that the poster you're talking
about? That's it, yeah. So that was the poster, and that's the same kind of visual motif that I use on the album cover. I just literally stole it for myself. And then actually the little ribbon around the edge, hear, see, feel, that took me a long time. I think I did each one of those bands, funnily enough, separately. Then I was like, I should have just copied it. So I just took that. I did my own album cover, obviously, which is another thing when it's like mastering. It's like, oh, I better figure out how to do the album cover. It's like, so, you know, it's like, I remember the last albums, like a couple days before, I was like, I gotta do the album cover. And I got Seashore, you know, it's one of these free online things. It's brilliant, but it's so simple. And such a step down for Photoshop users, but
I think that's nice. So I think kind of going old school is really good. Like, it actually helps work stand out when you're not just going with the newest fanciest thing. Like, go with the tried and tested stuff, I think is
absolutely. Well, I mean, from my, you know, where we came from, where I came from, anywhere where I literally cut pictures out and stuck them on a page and photocopied it back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically doing the same thing anyway, digitally, as we all know.
Yeah. Uh, And you're all very welcome to the Can Projects podcast, where we love to talk about culture, arts, nature, and wellness. And today we have an absolute treat in store for you, as you already know, with George Higgs Charles, who's in with us today to especially celebrate his new album, The Sense Ensemble. And we're getting into all of that, and you can find it on SoundCloud. You can learn more about George Higgs Charles on his website, georgehiggs.com. That's HIGGS.com.
We came up with these patterns, which were rhythms, and I would score the patterns on in music notation. Then I'd apply these rhythms to melody. I'd apply them to rhythmic, more sort of percussion instruments, and I call them a gestural motif. And then in performance, there's, it's called the Sense Ensemble Study Number 2 and Number 1 on my website, on the works page, I think. We did these performances where the sign language users would execute the signs and the audience would imitate them. Again, this participative kind of experience. And we used smoke ring cannons as well. You could smell the smoke as well. It was vanilla scented.
Brilliant.
So,
wow.
You know, that was, they are called them experiments and studies, and that's what they are. On the album, to get back to that, I include those Sense Ensemble studies, the three of them, and also some new work that the Arts Council funded this year, working again with Irish Sign Language users. This time they came up with, that's the album cover, working album cover. Basically, we came up again with patterns, and I created a number of pieces of music based on those patterns. All the album is all based on gestural motifs. But again, like, what I find really interesting, and, you know, somebody could say, hey, George, I listened to your album, but it just sounds like a bunch of songs. That's a fair point, you know? Absolutely, 100%. And that's what's important to understand is, like, all I want to do, I'm not reinventing the wheel or inventing anything. I'm just identifying something that's like anybody that was always there. It's just a fact to me that music is multisensory. But sadly, we lack the awareness of that. We've always concentrated on the aural, that the heard experience, which is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking it. But I just think that we lack the vocabulary. We lack the words to even talk about this. So when I was writing my thesis, that was the hardest thing. It's like, so how do you talk about this stuff? And everything, when you get deeper and deeper into it, they talk about musical gestures. I mean, the conductor's activity is extremely musical.
And eye contact as well, and body language. And
yeah,
it's always there. You're right. It is. It's always been there, really, actually. Yeah you're right. Yeah.
And again, I think the Indians had it right with the tuning up. It's like, that's part of the performance. It's all the performance. And I learned that early on, I think, as a performer. Like, the minute somebody reads about your performance, the show has begun, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point, yeah.
So we did that performance. People would come in and they'd be taught a gesture at the door, one of four gestures, given a colored P, and they'd sit in a section that had a flag with the same color P as their P, and they'd sit there, four audience sections, four signs, assigned per section. And then the assigner came in, and this kind of pulsating rhythm was going through. And actually, that was the first thing I had on Sense Ensemble Study 1 on the track when I first started recording back in whenever it was, May. I just had this pulsing rhythm, and I decided not to use it. I just didn't think it worked on the album, because that's what was happening in the venue. The whole venue was kind of vibrating. It was pretty wicked, actually.
Wow.
Vibrating speakers on the floor. And actually, you watch the video, it's on my website. I have it. I give it to you guys. You can hear that. And then the signer kind of she does the sequence of signs, and she encourages the audience to join her, and they do their part of this rhythm, this four part rhythm. So it's like this hocket where the audience is sharing these gestures. Then the music kicks in, the auditory music, and the signer brings the audience in and out. So the idea was that the audience participates, and that's what my research was. And after I said, you know, I kind of, whatever, assessed my data after sort of, did they participate? What, to what degree, to what percentage? And that was the participation.
Is this George on screen? Is this what you're talking about? That's the audience participant?
That's from Sense Ensemble Study 2, but it's the same idea. So it may as well, that's fine to show that. Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. We were teaching the audience the signs, then another signer brought them in and out. So they felt part of the music, and later we asked them, you know, did you feel this was a musical activity, or did you feel it was quite separate from music? We asked, got their feedback. And what was cool was in the study number one is that nobody spoke, and we didn't have to say, you're not allowed to speak. They just got the vibe right away, and people, I didn't say to anybody, by the way, you're not supposed to speak.
Yeah.
But nobody spoke, and until the Q&A. So,
and you weren't wearing a Shut the Hell Up t-shirt, or, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, everybody put their P into a speaker, because you were showing me the Evolvaphone,
which let me get that.
So that's kind of followed me throughout my career, these vibrating speakers. They're just literally speaker cones, naked speaker cones that I carry around with the wire. Like Chris and I were talking about, you know, hoovering with the cable behind you, carry the speaker around.
Is this a charge? Is that part of it?
Yeah, that was the first time you used the vibrating speakers. Those are hemp seeds, and because they made a good sound. It wasn't sort of not giving a nod to the legalized cannabis
activists. Hemp has a lot of uses aside from that.
And that was the electroacoustic exchange, and that's where we had different commodities vibrating speakers, but they make a great sound. And in the Sense Ensemble, these speakers being carried around, people would put their peas in there. And so that was another layer of the participative aspect, because people had their pee, they had their gesture, they contributed to the piece of music, which I guess is a big thing for me. And quite apart from the whole body multisensory aspect, I think participation is a big thing for me. I mean, I do a lot of arts participation work, and I get funding for that kind of work.
Actually, at a few shows, I've done a thing with a speaker as well.
Oh, really?
Where I put cling film on it, and then I put like a non-Newtonian fluid in it, like custard.
Yes.
And the bass makes it dance and bounce about the place.
That's really cool. Yeah. Mm. That's amazing.
Yeah, that goes into, you've done similar stuff, George, with I know it as cymatics or climatics, but you know under another term?
Yeah, I can't remember.
I can't remember it now,
Rodney plates, yeah. That was the guy that first kind of studied them. Yeah, Gladney. Just where guy I worked with, the guy who was my supervisor for my PhD and a good friend of mine, Dermot Furlong. He's one of these people that should have a statue made to him, because he's such an amazing person. But he used to work with Loudon guitars. Maybe I told you this in the last one. They used tea leaves on they had like a very specific vibrating, you know, linear actuator, and figured out where on the soundboard it was lacking resonance, you know, using tea leaves.
Yeah, well, I did a similar thing when I first came across that with tea leaves, but just with a bower on. And as long as the skin was kind of like, it was like the right tension, like you might have to, if it was too tight, you'd have to just dampen it down a little bit. And we would just sing into the Bowron and try different pitches, and you'd get different patterns. And then it was really fun. Like, and then we'd experiment with what happens when two people sing at two different pitches? And so then you get a combination of two different patterns. And
that's a really good idea. I've never heard that, Shane, because I know people have used tubes with balloons on the top stretched across as a membrane. That's much simpler, and I like that Bowron idea a lot, actually.
Yeah, because it kind of makes you wonder then, like, you know, like Bowron's kind of a pretty old instrument, so are tea leaves, so I doubt, like, it seems to be fairly kind of like old knowledge. Like, I find it as a subject really interesting, because it's like, it's a visual representation of sound.
Yeah,
there is an old tool for winnowing grain that is a skin stretched over a wooden hoop, much like a Bowron.
Well, they I think I'd heard that, Chris, I'd heard that a Balrog came from some kind of sieve, you know, where they were...
For separating the chaff from the grain.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd shake it in it, and you'd throw it up and let the wind blow away some of the powder and shake it and throw it up.
Yeah. It's like the Frisbee came from a cake tin, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let me see what else you were telling us about this. What's this called again, George?
That was the Evolvaphone, and they were the P's Mendelian. It was supposed to be like genetics inside this Evolvaphone, which was a kind of commemorating Darwin's anniversary, 2010. Yeah, it was 2009.
Because peas were used to discover the recessive genes in certain plants.
Yeah, exactly. So exactly. So the idea was the green and the white peas to have those in the speaker, and they would vibrate percussively, and then the seats you were sitting on had vibrating vibrotactile speakers into them. So, and then you had auditory, you know, sonic expression through audio speakers.
Are these more speakers, George?
Those are more speakers. Yeah. They're that was called Storm in a Teacup, and it was actually my son Liam, who's now 15 and taller than I am. His mother was pregnant with Liam. We didn't know it was going to be a boy, actually. Maybe Liam was born by the time the performance came around. Anyway, I got a recording. I went into the ultrasound. And I asked the GP, could I put get an audio output the time before. She said, yeah, bring your stuff in next week or next month or whenever we went back. And I got a recording of the heartbeat, and I put it into this piece called Storm in a Teacup, which was a scored piece of music with piano. And then the heartbeat kind of comes in and out. I processed it or chopped it up and made a rhythm out of it. And then, so people would come in, and actually, it's my ex-wife now, Sarah, her mother, is a potter, and so she made these little teacups with a hole in the side so I could feed a wire out, and people would come in to the performance. And my son Noah, I should have sent you the picture. Noah and I are sitting there, and I'll find it in a second. It's people are sitting, they have their teacups, and they put their teacups to their ears and they listen. So Noah and I just sit there, we can't hear anything, you know. Sit there. Yeah.
Okay, well, look, I tell you what, we're gonna take a very quick 2 minute bumper break. And George, so if there was a file or something you wanted to dig up there, could do that now. And we're just gonna take a very, very quick short break, and we'll be back in 2 minutes, guys. So stay tuned. We'll be back very shortly. Very welcome to the Can Projects podcast, where we love to talk about culture, arts, nature and wellness. And today we have an absolute treat in store for you, as you already know, with George Higgs Charles, who's in with us today to especially celebrate his new album, The Sense Ensemble. And we're getting into all of that, and you can find it on SoundCloud. You can learn more about George Higgs Charles on his website, GeorgeHiggs.com. That's HIGGS.com.
Making these instruments, I think Shane and I talked in a conversation earlier about, you know, the pros and cons of just writing music versus building instruments. And it's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of work too. And a lot of, like, again, storing things. It's like sometimes I wish I just composed, you know. I'm glad I don't, but you know what I mean. Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really good. I mean, we were talking, George, a bit about how, like, I gave up music a couple of times over the years. Music was all around me from a very young age. And, you know, you get to a point where you kind of go, you know, I just need to step back a little bit. But I'd never try to get too hung up on it, because it's just not really good for your headspace. And so if you get too hung up on that. And what I ended up doing is kind of focusing on some more technical stuff for a while. And then eventually, when I was ready to kind of go back towards music, I came back with such a fresher kind of approach that it ultimately was great. And I think that's why I love your work, George, actually, is because you do actually branch out a bit. And I think that just helps to enrich in each different facet of the work. It doesn't just have to be composition, like building instruments and going out into the world and interacting with real people. That's only going to, in my eyes, improve and boost the what's at the center of your work.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. And I was just thinking too, while you're saying that about going out, and I was thinking about the album, the Music for Modern Animals album. And one thing, when I listened back to that, I think of all the songs as kind of an adventure, like an adventure starts at the beginning of the song and you go somewhere on the adventure. And I guess that's the way I think of all music, whether it's building something, it's like an adventure and you're tackling this adventure. You're literally going out, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's like the Knight Errant. You go out in the forest, you don't know what you're going to encounter, the Indiana Jones. You're going to deal with it though. And that's the way a song is for me. And at the end, you bring them home again.
That's very insightful to listen to you talk about that. Just that, and for people as well in general, I think an insight into how does a composer actually approach work? Where does it come from? And it's not, I don't think there's like a manual on it as such. It is the same way as music is experienced differently by everybody. I think it's created also in a very unique way by each person.
And if you'd like to get in touch with Cann Projects, you can email us at cannprojects.info@gmail.com. And you can find our podcast on Spotify, Spreaker, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. I think we're on Podbean now, apparently, and lots of the usual spots. And you'll find some video clips on YouTube. And if you'd like to get involved in the conversation publicly, if you're brave enough, you can do so over on Twitter, in the Twitterverse. Not that you'll get any grief from us, but it is a bit of a Wild West scene out there. So join us at the Cann Projects.
And we're back. And George, you reminded me of a joke there. Who's the coolest guy in a hospital?
Who?
The ultrasound man.
Ah, good one, Chris. Okay, guys, do you know what? Hold our breath for 1 second, because I'm gonna stop record to safeguard this. Okay, and we're back.
That was well longer than a second.
So, George, we were just getting into some stuff there. Let me just turn off our stuff here so we can see what we're doing. There we go. So we were getting, you were telling us about how the Sense Ensemble came about, George. And we've got a video here that of some of the performance. Will we look at a few, what would you like to cover next? Will we look at some more, the pictures from the actual the photographs with the vanilla scented.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's not those, are they? Oh, and that's George's website there. That's georgehiggs.com. You can find out lots about George on there. And that's his SoundCloud, the new album, The Sense Ensemble. So let's pull up our other. There we go. So, George, what's this here now?
So that's during the Sense Ensemble Study 2, which is, I think, the fifth track on the album. We did that in the Samuel Beckett Theater in Trinity, and it was another study whereby we taught a sequence of gestures that the piece was based on to the string quartet, the Crash Ensemble String Quartet, and then to the audience, and the audience would enact these gestural syllables, whatever these patterns with us at different points. And we bring them, cue them in and out and bring them into the music. And it was scored as part of the music. And so on the album, you have, I have a reworking of what the string quartet was playing. I actually used to play on that piano by me, which is a player piano. I think maybe I told you in the last podcast. I just kind of, as often is the case when you have a piece of music, I off and noodled around with it on the piano, and I worked it into a piano piece from what was a string quartet and gestures. And then it's on the album, you'll hear it has piano, organ, drums, and bass as well, a few other things. So that's one thing I should say. Those sense ensemble pieces, study 1, 2, and 3, were all originally used as studies for my PhD research into multisensory composition. But they're really reworkings of those pieces. So those pictures are of the performance, the original performance, which was this experimental performance study, which was quite different from the music, you know, that's on the album. But, you know, what can you do? It's like when you film a play, it's always good to do a, make it a new thing. Yeah, like, exactly, you're right.
And that was the first part of our most recent show with composer, musician, artist, poet, Renaissance man, George Higgs Charles, who has just come out with his second album, The Sense Ensemble. And you can find that over on SoundCloud. And if you'd like to learn more about George's work, which I highly encourage you to go and check out, it's a very inspiring body of work George has, you can find more about George on www.georgehiggs.com. That's H-I-G-G-S. And the Sense Ensemble album is over there on SoundCloud. We'll have more from George Higgs soon. Stay tuned.